What's up, everybody? Armand here, back with another episode of this show. So today's guest, we have Kyle Gillette. Kyle Gillette is the owner of Blue Shirt Business Coaching. I think I have trouble saying it in the episode too. Blue Shirt Business Coaching. And what he does is he coaches the mindset for blue collar business owners. And he helps them just with their finances, with their life, with running their business. And the biggest problem that happens with a lot of blue collar business owners is actually scaling. So he helps focus on how to help them scale. This was a super awesome episode. I learned a ton from Kyle. He has this really great book out where he talks about just kind of taking yourself to the next level and the next higher mindsets of owning a business and leadership. And what I really resonated with is the fact that he talks a lot about your values, being self-aware, having a set of values, establishing them, testing them. And that's a lot. We go over that in the show. I even mention what my life values are, the ones I've come up with the past few years. I don't know if I've mentioned it on the podcast. Probably, maybe. I don't know. These are my values. And we talk about them in the show. And we also talk about what it means to have high character and how to attract employees with the same character as you, more thoroughbreds. You know, you're looking for thoroughbreds, not donkeys. We talk about setting habits that last a lifetime. We talk about motorcycle crashes and so much more. This was such an awesome episode. I really enjoyed it, and I hope you enjoy it as well. Thanks for listening to the Play Hard Podcast.
Work hard, play hard. Work hard, play hard. Work hard, play hard. Work hard, play hard.
Yeah, and we'll definitely get into those, but real quick, now we can just start the show. Tell me about pickleball. Wait, have you been getting into it lately? Because my friends have been super into it like the past month, and it's so much fun.
It is. We have these four really nice pickleball courts, outdoor courts, about 3 minutes from our house. And so in the winter, it doesn't work too hot. Yeah. But in the spring and the summer, we go there as a whole family and we play together. My oldest actually she's pretty decent. Without any sort of practice, she can swing the racket just right and hit it. And my wife and I like to play, and it's just fun. It's easy, and you can play as a couple. So it's really good.
Do you have a tennis background?
I worked at a tennis club for 3 years. And so I trained a lot of tennis players and helped them to get in a better shape. And so I also picked up the sport quite a bit too.
Yeah, that makes sense. Okay.
And so I play a lot of racquetball. That's where it really comes from. I played years and years of racquetball. And so that's really the sport that the pickleball ties to for me.
So what did you have a background in, like, fitness coaching or fitness training, and that kind of led you into business coaching?
So the long version of the story is when I was in college, I was afraid to grow up. I was afraid to become an adult. I was having a ton of fun in college, surfing, volleyball, like 5 or 6 times a week. I was doing those things. I went to school, I finished, and I did fine. But I was just enjoying the college experience quite a bit. And I ended up getting behind in school. And I remember talking to my parents on the phone my senior year, 1 quarter left. I needed, I think, 22 units. And a normal quarter was 16. So I really had to pick it up. Yeah. And I'm not that smart. I'm just not. And so I didn't know what to do, and I was freaking out about it. And it was also partly I didn't want to be an adult. So I was 40 pounds overweight, terrified about school and stressed about it. And I got a phone call from a guy I'd gone to India with. And he said, "Hey man, there's this job opportunity at a men's mentoring program. And I think you'd be a great fit for it." And so I asked him about it. He told me a little bit about it. And then I went and took the interview. And I was pretty much not qualified because I was the one that was a mess. But they wanted to interview me. So they interviewed me. And after an hour and a half of talking with them, they offered me the job, which meant I needed to finish up school. And then I'd live in the mentoring program and help these guys, 18 and 25, get their lives on track. And so for me, that was the first real exposure to coaching and mentoring. And then from there, I also started, I did a personal training business. I ran one for 1.5 years. And so that helped as well with the coaching. And there's other things that have happened, but that was the real catalyst that got me exposed to coaching.
Interesting. Okay. So also now for the listener, This is Kyle Gillette. He's the owner of Blue Shirt Business Coaching. Wow, that's a lot of bees. Blue Shirt Business Coaching. Their main goal is to get blue-collar businesses gain greater freedom, both financially in their life, in their business. Am I getting that right, Kyle?
Yep, you got it.
100%. Sweet. So what kind of prompted that, the start of that business?
Well, that's a story, too. So I used to have a business called Sage, and it was Sage Mindset Coaching was the old name of the business. But then I got a cease and desist letter from a Monster Mega company that said, hey, you can't use that name anymore because we use it, or one similar to it. And we do similar things that you do, so you can't use it. Mm-hmm. So I fought with them for about 6 months. Got a lawyer. The lawyers talked back and forth, a bunch of emails. And essentially they said, no, we'll take you to court. If you want to try to use the name, we'll take you to court. So I said, no, thanks. I think I'll pursue a different path. I'll keep all the intellectual property. I just won't use the term SAGE because it was an acronym. Now I use that same exact intellectual property in Blue Shirt, but it forced me to niche because I was broadly in about 20 different industries.
Yeah.
And I realized that I love working with blue-collar business owners. I grew up on an orange farm in the Central Valley of California. I did that for multiple years. I ran a pet resort for multiple years. So I've got that blue-collar blood in me, and I enjoy working with that group of folks. And so I went, all right, I guess I have to niche, which is what everybody tells you to do. And so I went and followed the advice that I've heard many, many times and came up with the name Blue Shirt because, you know, blue is obviously blue collar, and it represents a lot of different things, including like calm and loyalty and organization and those types of things.
So now are you always wearing blue shirts?
You know, I get that question. And if I'm going to be on an interview or in a networking event, I do wear a blue shirt.
Nice.
I do.
Okay.
I already had a bunch, so it didn't make it too hard.
Yeah. So what separates, I mean, the big thing with you is mindset. So what separates like the mindset of a blue collar worker versus a white collar worker?
Yeah, I think the blue collar worker thinks more of themselves as a worker, right? Even the blue collar business owner thinks of themselves more as a worker. And one of the things that I try to encourage the home services business owners and the such is to get your boots off of the dirt or off of the carpet or off of whatever where you're doing the work and get them into an office where you're working on the business so that ultimately you can be an owner and not someone that owns a job. Because whether you're a blue collar business owner or quote unquote white collar, most people own a job instead of owning a business.
So I imagine a common problem amongst like blue collar business owners would be scaling just because they want to stay in the weeds and keep doing the work.
Yeah. Yeah, there's a lack of trust of employees often where it's hard to find loyalty. It's hard to find the high caliber employee. And then once you do find a high caliber employee, it's difficult to for the business owner to put the work into empowering them and trusting them because they've been burnt so many dang times. Where in other industries, it's not quite as bad. And it still happens for sure, but it's not quite as bad. And so you have to create a really wonderful culture in any organization, but especially in a culture where the guys are outside and it's 15 degrees outside and they're working, right? You need to create a really amazing culture to get someone to come back. And what does that equal? Well, that equals caring about your employees, spending time with them, learning about their lives, and empowering them to make good decisions themselves, which breeds trust, loyalty, consistency, all those types of things. And that's obviously not always easy, but it's 100% possible.
Yeah, and I imagine that transfers very much over to your personal or day-to-day life. Those are all things people look for, you know, be it in personal relationships, working relationships, and they're not easy things to come by every day.
Yeah, it's character, right? That's what we're talking about. It's like high character people. And so if you run an organization, regardless of what industry, if you're a high character person, you're going to hire high character persons.
Yeah.
Are you familiar with the name Dave Ramsey?
No. I mean, the name sounds familiar, but not enough to where I could spit out his work.
Sure. So he's a financial advisor, not advisor, but financial like advocate, let's call it, to help people get out of debt, especially. And he has a saying in his book that he says, we only hire thoroughbreds, not donkeys. And I think that that's the reality. You have to think that way when it comes to employees. If you're a thoroughbred as a business owner, which I hope everyone is that's listening, then you don't want to hire anybody that's not a thoroughbred. And if you're only hiring thoroughbreds, they don't want to work with anybody but that level.
Yeah.
And if you're hiring donkeys or jackasses, in other words, you don't want, they don't want them in there, and it's going to completely disrupt the culture.
Yeah. This podcast's audience is pure thoroughbreds. So
yeah, exactly.
Of course. No, that totally makes sense. It's kind of like, I remember having this conversation with a friend. We were talking about how you hear oftentimes, like, you are a reflection of the five people you're surrounding yourself with the most. But the same could be said on the other side of the coin, where the people you attract into your life are a reflection of how you are, who you are. So it's kind of like, yeah, both sides. Like, they make up you, but you also make up those five people. Like, you bring them in and attract them in the first place. So if you're working on yourself, you're working really hard, you're like building your best version of yourself, you know, maybe you'll find a friend doing the same thing, not in the same industry, but that kind of thoroughbred quality is there.
Yeah, my wife and I talk about finding friends and being really intentional about finding the right friends that we want in our lives, because we've got three kids, you know, they're all young and very impressionable, mm-hmm, and we want to surround ourselves with the right people. And that's actually kind of hard, you know, getting the right people in your life that influence you and you influence them, and then they obviously influence your family. But it's worth the effort, just like it's worth the effort when you're running a business, because I've made the mistake of hiring the wrong people before, and it's costs a lot of money and of your time.
Yeah.
And of course, stress on top of all that.
Yeah, I totally agree. To touch back on what you were talking about, a character, I'm really curious, like, how would you define a high character person?
Yeah, you know, I would go to the four pillars that I talk about in my book, and I would say that a high character person has a high level of self-awareness. They're very aware of themselves. And what that means is the impact they're having on other people and the way that they're responding to other people and who they are as a person, what their purpose is, that type of stuff. And then they're accountable. They say what they're going to do, and then they freaking do it. Period. They just do it. You know, it's like that handshake. I shake your hand, I say I'm going to show up, or I say I'm going to do something. We don't need to sign a contract. I'm going to be there. Period. And then a growth is someone that is going, okay, I may struggle with this significantly right now, but that doesn't mean forever I'm going to struggle with this. Mm-hmm. They're willing to consistently put in the work, and they believe that they're going to get there and continue to grow. And then empowerment is, if they have these three things in place or they're growing in them, then they're able to empower people very well.
So they're able to kind of like bring that out of others, those three.
Exactly. Exactly.
Nice. Wow, I love that. So
I describe it like a leadership house. Self-awareness is the foundation of your leadership house. If you don't have that, you can't build anything without a foundation, of course. And then accountability is the nails that holds the leadership house together. Growth is the walls and the roof. And we got to remodel. We got to adjust and change, move the furniture, move a wall here and there as we grow as leaders. And then empowerment's the windows and doors where people are seeing and watching and paying attention to your leadership and want to be a part of it at a certain point.
Yeah. Wow. So what's your book called? I want to throw it in the show notes for everyone to check out.
It's called Sage Leadership, a 4-part framework for becoming a people first leader.
All right. Sweet. And hopefully that book didn't get sued.
It's going to get canceled in 6 months. So buy it now because it will be gone in 6 months, at least under that. Yes, really.
Oh yeah. My God. So wow. These guys, they really, oh my God. That's not.
Yeah, they ate my lunch. That's for sure. You know, they were the bully that ate my lunch and then
threw it up on me. There was some sense of like number one, getting burned. It does feel like you think that this was like an example of a big company taking advantage of a smaller operation.
Yes. Here's the catch. I do think that, but I also at the same time think that they did have a leg to stand on. I wasn't trying to do anything with their intellectual property, yeah, or like ride on their coattails, because we're very different businesses. But the other catch is I'm okay with it because I'm at peace about it, and it forced my hand in a certain way to move into the blue collar world, into the blue shirt.
Yeah.
And this is what I'm going to do. I'm going to do this my whole life, regardless of the name would have changed or not. But now for the rest of my life, as I'm doing coaching, I'm only going to get better and better at serving in this industry instead of spreading myself thin and serving, yeah, all kinds of different industries. So ultimately, it was a service to me, and that's the way that I'm, you know, framing it. And it's up to me. That's the mindset. It was up to me to frame it the way I want to frame it.
Exactly. Yeah. And so what, okay, so switching over, great that you mentioned mindsets. What are some of the mindsets that you coach on in your business?
Yeah, so values is like the first one. I want to make sure that the person I'm working with has their values dialed in. You need to have a mindset that filters your life through a mindset, or excuse me, through values, and filters your business through values. I describe it as the rebar in the self-awareness part of our business and our leadership, because rebar serves as what creates the tension in the concrete and prevents it from cracking and crumbling. And if you don't have values, then you're going to crack and crumble. You just will, because you don't have a good filter. You don't have that good reinforcement. Yeah. And so this is where I press into one of the first things, not the very first, but one of the first things.
Quick. All right. Quick pause then. Can I tell you my values? Do you give me a rating? You see what works, what not?
Please tell me, but I don't know if I'm going to rate your values.
Yeah, rate my values 1 to 10. No, I'm kidding. But yeah, well, first, that's one way of me saying I really agree with that. And I think it's really important for anyone to have like a personal set of values. That being said, this was just a product of me really liking my ethics class and being like, damn, I like the concept of a moral dilemma was so fascinating to me, on how you could have two values, two things that you live your life by, and they could conflict against each other. And like, that's what causes these dilemmas. I thought a dilemma was black and white, but that's where the grayness comes in. So I decided to figure out what exactly are my values. So to me, it's my top five in order is integrity, curiosity, courage, respect, and discipline.
Nice. So let me tell, I have to look. They're in my head, but they're not, the words aren't exactly memorized. So here's mine: gratitude, learning, integrity, courage, excellence, service. And then I'm debating if I want to have joy on there or not. Yeah. I feel like gratitude and joy are similar.
Say, but not quite. I feel like gratitude leads to joy. Like that's kind of the bridge over. Like for me, a big one's self-control, but discipline kind of is that
right
path you walk to get to self-control. So I figured, all right, handle that.
Well, and values are fun. Ultimately, when you do the work of figuring out your values, they're a lot of fun. But the catch is, I talk about it in my book, but the catch is you want to, yes, you define your values, and that's very important, but then you want to literally define them. So for you, gratitude might mean something to you versus what it means to me. And what it means to you is extremely important, and what it means to me is extremely important. And if it's different, that's totally okay. So you define it for your own, you write it down and you document it so you have it in front of you. And then the other thing I encourage people to do is to come up with a story that really exemplifies that value in your life. Something that you experienced, preferably, or maybe something that you observed, but preferably where you got to be, it was part of your life. And that really solidifies that value into your heart and your head.
I think that's a fantastic idea, example. And like, that's something I want to try in my free time. I can even think right now of a time where, because I said that like that's my things in order, and curiosity is above respect, but I can think of a time where being my curious nature, just like my insatiable need to question and ask, and it makes me a great podcast host, but sometimes, you know, some relationships that's not necessary. And when it goes above respect, like that, yeah, sometimes it's like I would ignore that to get to the bottom of what I'm thinking. And I can think of stories where they go both ways. And I think this is a great example of what you can do to kind of sort through those values and see, you know, the order is constantly changing. The, like, as we grow, as we evolve as people, I imagine values come and go.
Yeah. And I mean, if you want to take it to another level, right, you've defined them, you tell a story about them. That's a true story about you. Then you make up a story. It sounds funny, but you basically go, if gratitude or any other value that you have is the one you focus on, then you create a story about what it would look like in the future. Whether you want to project the future to 6 months from now or 6 years from now, you're projecting out what it would look like for you to be really living graciously. And what does that look like? And you describe it in as much detail as you can. Because your brain doesn't know the difference between what is reality and the reality you create if you do a good job of creating that reality. So it's like you're writing a fictional book to a 12-year-old. And if that 12-year-old can't tell the difference between the story you're telling and reality, now your brain can't tell either.
Yeah.
And you do that, and you're going to create a new reality for yourself 6 months from now because your brain has to get there. It's like, what the crap's going on with this gap? And it wants to fix the gap, which is a really fun thing to do. And you could do this with goals and vision and all kinds of things.
And I think a really great example of that would be when someone journals and they look back at their journals from 6 months ago. And because I've had this happen, I've talked to tons of people. They had this happen where you see your previous entries from like a year, 6 months ago. And you're like, wow, I didn't even think about this since I wrote it. But the things I wrote about have either the problems sorted themselves, the goals got achieved, like whether it was the way you thought it would happen or not, oftentimes probably not, but like you ended up getting across that finish line somehow. And I really do think there's a power in writing it down and kind of envisioning yourself in that future and then being like, okay, this is something that a mentor told me was really helpful, is don't just see yourself reaching the goal, but picture yourself 3 months after you hit your goal. Like, what are you doing? What are you doing after you... Like, the example they used was kind of a superficial, but it was on purpose. They're like, let's say your goal is to buy a sports car. Like, 3 months after you bought the sports car, how does it feel driving? What are you doing with that? What? And it was like a very clear way of saying, like, you hit it, what next? Like, are you satisfied? Like, is this the real goal you want? Or is there something else, better goal that you can kind of attribute over there?
Yeah, that would serve a lot of people, because I think even those that get to the pinnacle of their profession, they get there and then they're really not actually that satisfied.
Yeah, you get to the top and you look around, you're like, what next? I'm lonely.
Yeah, yeah. And you know, it's important to project what does it look like to have that success. So that's great. I really appreciate that.
Yeah. So the next steps, you get values. Like, what are some other mindsets that really benefit people from learning? Like, what do you notice people don't have that you have to shift? Like, what mindsets do you usually have to change in blue collar business?
They need to reflect more. And you actually touched on it. One of the habits. So I've got five mindsets and five habits in my book. And one of the habits. Well, five mindsets and five habits for self-awareness. But the habit is journaling or writing. And we need to do that. I don't need to reiterate what you said, but it's really important to do. And I teach people various ways to do it. And I can share right now, if you'd like, how I do it. I have a Saturday routine of how I do a very specific type of journaling. But I actually do three different types of journaling. And one of them is really business-related. One of them is just a dump. And another one is more related to the relationships with my family, with my kids and wife. And those are three different ways, but all of those matter in the business world, because you have to let go of the stress. You have to let go of what's going on. For me, when I put it down on paper, I'm letting it go. I'm surrendering it. I'm done. I'm at peace with it. Whatever it is, good, bad, or indifferent, I'm letting it go, because we don't need to try to control things. And I'm not ultimately in control of anything, you know? And so getting it down on paper or digitally actually helps me to release. And yeah.
Man, Kyle, I am slightly jealous of your ability to just let things go after putting it out. I'm at least aware of this, but no, that's definitely something that I really wish to work on. I mean, I got time, but yeah, is my ability. Like, sometimes I definitely get in this pattern or habit of repeating unhelpful thoughts, whether they be true or not. I appreciate how creative I am, but like, man, sometimes I'm too creative on these like negative repetitive thoughts. And it's just like, I wish I could just journal. And then even like when I played sports, the best analogy is leave it on the field. Like, I was definitely the kid who could take a loss with me for a little too long, or a win, dude. Sometimes it works the other way around. Sometimes you let it get to your head. But yeah, that's definitely something I've been working on.
Yeah, and it's not that I do pick them back up sometimes, right? Like, I don't have it all figured out, that's for sure. But if you don't ever write it down, it's hard to put it down, because it just swims in your head. Yep.
Yeah, totally agree. Totally agree. What about, so what kind of habits, so we got journaling, what kind of habits do you have throughout your day-to-day life? Do you have a routine? Is your day structured or is it more free-flowing?
No, it's definitely structured. I mean, there's a window when it's in it, when it's a little bit more open because I'm working with clients at various times, but I get up at 5:30. I try really hard. Sometimes I get up 5:45, you know, but I'm getting up at 5:30 and then jump out of bed and I go downstairs and I spend time on the couch. And what I'm doing is I'm praying, I'm reading, I'm doing nothing for at least 10 minutes and sometimes way longer, where I'm just sitting there or just laying there. And often I'll have my eyes closed and I'm not sleeping, but I'm just thinking. And this is something that people really struggle to do, is do nothing and just think. Right. A part of that window of time too, that total window of about an hour and a half before my kids get up, I'm also journaling. I'm doing the two different journals that I do every day and reflecting on those things. I review my day and figure out what I need to do for the day, move things around. If I've got too much, move it to a different day. I do that with an app called Todoist. I don't know if anybody's familiar with that or not.
I love Todoist. That's my to-do list. Yes, big fan. Love that.
It's fantastic.
Yeah, it really is.
Yeah. So I do almost everything through that in my morning routine. And then, of course, then the kids get up and we do that type of stuff. And then I jump into work. But Monday is a special day because on Monday I spend 8 o'clock to 8:30 a.m. every Monday. I spend time with the CEO of my business. And how I define CEO of my business is it's God, right? So I spend 30 minutes every Monday with God and I pray, I journal, and it's a different journal as well, asking questions, that kind of stuff. So some people may not be Christians or have a higher power, whatever they believe in, but for me, it's God, it's Jesus, and I need to spend time with him. So that's a very important Monday routine. And then the rest of the day is coaching. But I don't know how deep you want me to go here, but I also track seven different areas. So I have seven different areas on my to-do list or my to-do-ist that are my projects, right? So like relationships, work, my home to-do list, financial.
I do that too education. On to-do-ist. I have the projects be like not specific projects, but overarching areas of life. And then I like it because you can schedule things for the day. So I go to my daily to-do list. But if I remember something, I'm like, okay, well, this is a financial goal I want to hit. Like, I'll just throw it on the finance section. Yep. And if I really want to be reminded, then I'll set a date on it because then I'm going to see it and do it.
Yep, exactly. And each one of those is colored a certain color, which coordinates with my calendar. So if I have things associated with any of those categories, it coordinates with my calendar. And then at the end of the week, I track the number of hours I spent in the key categories that I want to be spending time in. And I have them broken down in percentages and number of hours. So I want to spend 10 hours coaching every week. I want to spend 5 hours networking. I want to spend XYZ, right? All that stuff. And then at a glance, I can look at my dashboard and know how I performed that week.
Man, are you managing this all yourself?
Yeah.
How?
Well, just that part.
Yeah. How long did it take to get this like kind of system for your own life in place? Because that's something, dude, that's something I've been working on for like what feels like way too long, but probably hasn't been that long.
I'm pretty happy with where it is now. It probably took 2 years worth of time of refining it to get to where it is now. I've always been fairly systematized, but once I got the tools together and I was like, oh, I can synergize all this stuff, then it became pretty easy. And honestly, to do the actual tracking, it takes me maybe an extra 20 minutes a week. It's really not that big a deal. It's a thing I do. I actually do it on Saturday. I just look back at the week on Saturday and document the numbers. And that's it. It's really, really simple. And I think people, when they hear me saying this and they're like, man, that guy's like anal retentive or he's a perfectionist or super detail oriented. I'm not. If you're familiar with DISC, I'm an ID. So I'm about a ton about people and then a ton about return on investment. I'm not super organized, the C style. But the return is why I do it, right? If I know what I'm doing and if I'm not spending enough time in a particular area, in a heartbeat, I know that I'm not getting a good enough return there. And then I can act on it and make the change in real time. And people just, my thing is most people, I'd say 95, 99% of people do not have a box score on themselves. Do you have a favorite team, Armand?
Yeah, I mean, any Houston sports team is going to be my favorite.
Okay, so let's go with the Rockets because it's. I mean, I know we're in the football, but
yeah, true.
The Rockets. So
they've been tough to watch lately.
True. So the Rockets, if it's fourth quarter and it's 95-102, and the Rockets, they're down by 7, and there's 2 minutes left. At a glance, you know that they still stand a chance. They might be down by 7, but they still stand a chance.
Yeah.
And this is what people don't have in their lives. They don't have a clear understanding of, where is my scoreboard? Am I even close to accomplishing the goals that I've set? They don't track them. They don't put in any sort of metrics in place for themselves, developing themselves, or to achieve their goals.
Yeah. And I'm guilty of this, but how many people do you think have just given up halftime having no clue where they are on the scoreboard or time? Yeah, that's a really good way of putting it. And I totally agree. Like, I myself, I'm not someone who I'd consider. Right now, my room is an absolute mess. Like, there's laundry strewn all over the place because I haven't done my laundry yet. And you know why? It's because I haven't put do laundry on Todoist. Like, I may not be, like, I will be the first to admit I'm not the most organized person ever, but having some sort of platform that manages it for me is like a world of a difference. And there are so many out there, like this one's for me, but there's, you know, project management platforms, time management. You could do it by schedule. You could do it by, like, there are many different ways. I highly recommend to anyone just, like, find which one works for you. And it'll probably take a few weeks, most likely a few months of testing different ones, but then you'll just land on the one that works for you.
Yeah, it's worth it. I mean, I call it my second brain.
Yeah.
Because you know the name David Allen? Are you familiar with that name? So he has a method called getting things done. And a lot of people are familiar with GTD or getting things done. And he has a quote that says, your mind is for having thoughts, not keeping them. And I agree with that to a certain point. But his point is basically, we run around with a billion thoughts in our head and they stress us out. But if you just put them down on paper and get them out, it frees you to actually be creative. You're creative, right? So when you dump things out, it opens you to be creative. And for those of us that aren't near as creative, when you dump it out, then you get more opportunity to do that. And it's so helpful to de-stress, let it go, dump out the to-dos. And journaling, of course, is another way to do that, but that's a different purpose. And so, get a to-do list, get a digital to-do list, because most of what we do is habits, right? Yeah. It's repeated things over and over and over again. Yeah. And so put that all into a system that reminds you for you instead of you having to remember all those things, and let it reward you. Even if just the tick off of the task is that dopamine hit. Great. You know?
Yeah. I like being creative is a lot like, I don't know, water in a bucket. Like, if you don't do anything with that water or those creativities, that's totally fine, but it's just going to get stagnant. Like, you can't expect to use that 10 days from now. No, you got to dump it out, get a fresh bucket, and, like, start it. But it really does start with that, get it all out. And to me, some of the best things that work is a combination of going for a walk, even if it's just 10 minutes, and then putting pen to paper, you know, start typing away on a Google Doc or something like that. But it really, like, you would be surprised how much a walk can just open your brain up.
Yeah, I mean, that's the habit of thinking time is what that is. Especially if you're not listening to anything and you're just walking and letting your brain open up. And there's so many brilliant insights that everybody that's listening to this has if they just shut themselves up for a little bit and not crank their head down and stare at their phone and just actually, I mean, when was the last time any of us just sat in a chair and looked at the wall? Literally. People don't do that anymore. You know, we've got to be doing something. If you have to be doing something.
After you finish this episode, of course.
Right. Crochet, you know, if you have to do something, crochet, but don't play a video game. Don't stare at your phone. Don't listen to anything. Just, you are supremely intelligent, and we don't allow ourselves to utilize that power that's within.
That's something I think people attribute meditating to, sitting cross-legged with incense burning and chanting Om. But at the end of the day, all meditating really is that. It's going for a run without your headphones and focusing on your breathing, or sitting in a room, eyes open or eyes closed, just not forcing thoughts, just letting them show up. I've noticed that even helps in times where I'm in that overthinking or ruminating mode, just letting yourself, sometimes us holding on to those thoughts and being like, you can't think this, causes them to explode more. Giving yourself that thinking time to sit and say, you know what, brain, for the next 5-10 minutes, I'll set a timer, do whatever you want. You're allowed to think whatever you want. I noticed my brain just like, I don't really want to anymore.
It rests. Yeah. It's like, thank you. It's like, oh, I get to rest.
I can do whatever I want. I'm going to do nothing. It's like, all right, cool. Right.
A good thinking spot is, for some people, you know, it's like a hot tub. I have a business manager that every morning, I can't remember what time, but every morning he hops in the hot tub and he just sits there for 20 minutes. It's good for his body, of course, but it's really good for his brain. You said something that jumped out to me, and our brains can't think negative. And so when you say, you know, the classic, don't think of a red car, what do you see? You see a red car. And so we can't stop our brains. We only can think in the affirmative, in the positive. Our brains don't know how to do the negative. And it's a really weird thing, but you can leverage that to your advantage. And I still don't quite understand how that works, but it's something I'm studying because I think it's extremely powerful to be able to leverage that ability of your brain.
Yeah, talk about mindset shifting. Like, once you unlock that, I feel like you'd be able to really adjust the way that you think.
Yeah, yeah.
So one thing I would like to talk about, even though this is something my brain says don't mention because I don't want to know, but you mentioned that you had a motorcycle accident, and I told you that that's one of my hobbies. That's something I do in my free time. I was just curious, like, what your experience with riding is. Is that something you're still doing, and like, what happened?
Yeah, so I started riding how old was I? Probably 23-ish, somewhere in that range.
It's like about when I started.
Yeah, and I rode a let's see if I can remember it, Yamaha XS400, I think is what it was. And it was a Kickstart, 1983 Kickstart XS400. Like, it was junk. But I couldn't do anything stupid on it. So I rode that for a bit, and then I got annoyed because it was...
I'm just checking it out. It's like one of the cafe racers type.
I think so. Yeah, that sounds right. And I really enjoyed it quite a bit, but it didn't always start, and there was issues with it. Plus, it was a freaking Kickstart, you know. Yeah. It was the 2000s. Come on. I should be able to just turn a key. And so then I went and got a Harley Sportster, right? It was an 883, and that thing was a lot faster, a lot heavier, and way easier to ride, right? It was way more enjoyable. And I would ride with guys that had crotch rockets, and we would go out in the hills because I used to live in the Central Coast. And so we'd go out in the hills of the Central Coast and just ride, and it was a blast. And I got to the point where I could lean the bike so low that the peg would lift up. Like, I could feel my foot lifting, and I was, this is nuts. Like, I shouldn't be doing this, but it was awesome. So I kept doing it.
Sports bikes, like, those pegs are higher. You'd probably be scraping on a Harley.
It would lift up because it would bend, and so it would scrape, and then I'd feel my shoe lift. I'm like, whoa, what's happening? And then I realized, oh, the peg was hitting the floor, the ground. And, you know, it scared me, but it was cool. But there was a development happening in that area, and they were putting up this development in a kind of a pasture land. And it overlooked the Pacific Ocean, and they had all the asphalt in, curbs and curves, and it was just perfect. No houses. It was just the asphalt. So I went up there one day. I rode up, and I went through the hills and went as fast as I could. And I stopped, and I was just sitting at the end of the road. It was a cul-de-sac, and I was staring out at the Pacific Ocean, just chilling. It was, you know, a gorgeous day. And then I was like, okay, time to go. So I got on the bike, and I headed back down the hill. And I didn't remember the road properly because I started going up this hill thinking that it was just up a hill, and then that was it. And it would come to the top, and it would turn or whatever, and that the hill would slow me down. Well, turns out that the hill about halfway through curved, and I forgot.
Oh.
And I looked down at the speedo, and I was going 50 miles an hour. So I'm in a residential area, so it's crazy to be going that fast, first of all, but going 50, and I can't lean it enough. I freak out. I hit the brakes, lock up the front and back tire, and then I slide into the curb, which is just this raised area.
Yeah.
I slam it with my front tire. Then I went flying. I don't remember flying, but I went flying through the air. And when I came to, I was 30 feet from where I impacted, and the bike was about 15 inches from my head.
Damn.
And what happened is I went flying through the air, my legs got tangled in barbed wire fence, and I slammed my head on the ground. And I woke up, and there's the bike. And for some reason, it stopped. And I remember looking and going, where's the dig in? There was no digging in from the motor into the dirt. It just stopped. There should have been a bunch of digging in. Because I don't know how else the bike would have stopped. And because I stopped because I caught myself, my body was caught in a barbed wire fence. That's why I stopped. The fence caught me. Yeah. But the bike stopped somehow on its own, or it's just very strange. And so I woke up with a concussion and I wanted to just go to sleep. And I didn't.
Yeah.
But, and you know, I survived that. I didn't, I just have scars in my shins from the barbed wire fence. And that's it. But after that, my now wife was like, okay, you need to not ride that anymore. And so I quit, but I jumped onto a Honda, what was it? Honda 400R, I think. I can't remember the designation anymore, but anyway. And started riding dirt bikes. It was a dual sport. So I got to ride on the street a little bit and then went and rode around on that. We moved here and then eventually I sold it. And I think I screwed myself over. I don't know when the next time I'm going to get to ride is.
Maybe your kids want to learn dirt biking someday.
Yeah, I'm not. Yeah, I would love it, man. I'd love it. They rode a little 50, little mini bike for a while, then hopped on 125, and I'm cruising around on 400 or 450.
So now you're a mountain biker. Is that kind of how that transfer happened, or have you always been mountain biking?
No, I started mountain biking in college a little tiny bit, and then it's super famous out here. Like Galbraith is the name of the mountain that's out here, and it's a really fantastic mountain for that. And so I got a bike and started to ride some more. Now I'm like a half hour away, so I don't get to ride near as much as I want to. But it's a replacement. But every time I hike in the mountains or ride in the mountains, I'm like, man, I'd rather be on a dirt bike. Every single time, man, no matter what, I'm like, gosh, it'd be better to get on a dirt bike.
Yeah, that sounds funny. And then you also work out, so you've been doing a lot of CrossFit.
Yeah. I joined a gym probably 4 or 5 months ago. I hadn't done any sort of working out in a gym for a while. I had trained to go climb Mount Shasta last May. And so I'd spent 6 months training for that and preparing for it. So I was getting in shape for that, which was really good for me because I hadn't worked out seriously for over a year. Like I do stupid crap at home, but I was really terrible in my discipline of that. And I think that being disciplined in your physical health is extremely important for business, relationship, all kinds of other areas of your life. And so I did the hike and then I was like, well, I'm not going to go do another hike anytime soon. I need something else that really motivates me. And so I found CrossFit and it's a great community and it kicks your butt every single time. And I go in and I'm like, this not gonna be that hard. And every time I'm like less than halfway through and I'm going, this sucks. This is so hard. So that's what I need though. So it's worth it.
I noticed that about working out in general, there's a difference between doing it because it's a part of who you are and like a part of your lifestyle and a part of your like rooted habits versus let's say you're running a marathon and for like the next 3 to 6 months, I don't know how long a marathon preparation takes, but like 3 to 6 months you're preparing, you're running, you're getting fit. You do this marathon, but then after you're like, well, I did the marathon and you just slowly taper off of running. Versus if running was a part of your life always.
Yeah.
It's really interesting how it's like, if we have these, it goes kind of back to the goals thing and like the 3 months after. It's like, if you have these goals, but you're doing all these things just for that goal, then like, what are you doing after? Is this something you want to keep in your life? And that, I've noticed that in myself. It's like certain things I'm like, oh, I took from that, this I want to keep in my life. But sometimes it just doesn't pan out that way because the habit served its purpose.
Yeah, I think in your story about the marathon, I think you're pointing out the difference and the value difference between habits and goals. When you have a goal, it's worth a ton, of course, for sure. But if you're not establishing any sort of habits through that goal, then I don't think you should be pursuing the goal very strongly. There should be some sort of habits built into the goal that you're establishing. so that, that whatever you're pursuing in that goal lasts in your life for a long time. If you just have some goal to run a marathon, yes, that's valuable for sure. But if it doesn't ultimately turn into being a healthier person and having the habits of being a healthier person, if it's through running or dieting or community through marathons, then I don't think the goal is treated quite right. It doesn't have the same amount of power. So whenever clients of mine establish goals, one of the things that I'm doing with them is going, what are the measures that you're going to be tracking here? And ultimately, those measures are habits. That's what they really are. And if then I can help them implement those habits ongoing past the goal achievement, now I'm really helping my clients win. But if we just accomplish the goal and then they quit doing it, we're not really winning as much as we could. And I think that we got to design our goals in that way.
Yeah, that's a really interesting difference between habits and goals. And I like that you called it a value difference. What are some things that you teach to get habits to stick that aren't, you know, easily Googleable?
Yeah, I teach a method called the accountability pass, is what I call it. And I'll walk you guys through it. So pass stands for four things. It's passive, active, structures, and self. Those are the four pieces to it. And passive accountability, basically what that means is, what's a goal you have right now in your life, or a habit you want to establish, Armand?
Let's go with daily writing, because, well, let's habit and goal. All right. This is a great. I'm excited we're doing this. All right. So goal, I want to finish writing this book that I've been writing. I was super into it for November, kind of tapered off a little in December, and now I'm like, it's come to the point where I have it. I just feel like I'm scared to publish, quite honestly. Like, I just need to finish editing and get it out there. That being said, because of my tapering off of this, my writing has dwindled, but that's something I do want to do every day. I do love writing genuinely, and whether it's for a book or just personally, like talking about my day or whatever, like, I'm not talking journaling. I mean, like, writing, you know, blogs or articles or just sharing information that I've collected in my life through the form of writing, even if it's poems. So yeah, there we go. Goal and habit.
Okay. So behind that, what's the intention? What's the big purpose of writing?
Clarity of my thoughts.
Okay. And how do you want to use that to benefit others, to serve others?
In the purpose of the book, I have this skill that I truly believe I'm gifted in. And I also truly believe there's a gap in people who want to learn this. And I want to share that. And what it is, it's about active listening. It's basically all the lessons I learned from this podcast, from I did cold calling for a while. And then just like everywhere in my life, people say I'm a great listener. And it's not something that I was born with. I was born with the skill to talk. But I learned... I love talking so much. To be a real conversationalist, you have to learn listening. So, like, I've put effort into it since I was in early high school, honestly, is when I can first remember being like, I need to learn how to listen better. And it's started to pay off. People tell me. And now I have skills. I have actionable insight. I've even tested pieces of this on the internet, and it works very well. So I know this is something that's good for people, good for me, and it'll work.
Okay, so book title, Powerful Lessons from a Born, Powerful Active Listening Lessons from a Born Talker, right? Something like that.
Yeah,
so,
I like that.
But the heart behind it is the point we're getting to here. The heart behind it is you want to be able to serve other people with your God-given talent or your hard-earned talent, however you want to say it, so that they can be active listeners, which benefits them and other people in tremendous ways, right? So there's a really big vision. It's really powerful. It the most important thing about creating, using this accountability thing to establish habits and accomplish goals is that it needs to serve other people. The ultimate end of it needs to serve other people. If it doesn't, then it's going to die. It's too focused on the person or some gain that they get only. It's just going to die. So that's the first thing. And yours clearly serves other people, right? So now we got that. So then what do? The passive part is you tell a bunch of people, right? So let's say you tell 40 people about this. As many people as you can. And what happens is three, four people will follow up with you intentionally.
Oh man, that's been happening.
And they'll say, yeah. And they'll say, hey, what's going on with that book? How's it doing with the writing? What was your plan? Yeah, but it keeps you, it makes you go, crap, I got to keep writing. Yeah. I got to finish this book. I got to publish this book. But it's not enough typically, right? So now you've got these people following up, which is great. And of the 40, usually it's like 10%. So you tell 100 people, 10 people follow up. It's like a 10% thing because most people don't care. Not because they're jerks. They're just busy. Yeah. So then of those, let's say two or three that follow up, you then go, okay, which one of these would be the best to reach out to? And this becomes the active accountability. So passive, they ask you about it. Active, you go to them and you say, hey, Joe, I know you recently asked me about the book. I want to let you know this is what's been happening. But you know what would be really cool, Joe, is if we met on a weekly basis to talk about what you're trying to accomplish and what I'm trying to accomplish and hold each other accountable to it. We'll talk about it for a few minutes. We can meet for coffee, talk on the phone. And then that'll help us accomplish what we need to accomplish. There's no fee or anything like that. It's just a friendship of keeping each other accountable, right? Checking in on each other. So that's active because you have to act on it and they need to act in return. Then you have structures. So you're going to love this because to me, there's two fundamental structures that are needed. You need a calendar system. I use Google. You can use whatever you want, but Google or calendar, excuse me. And you put everything on that calendar that you do in your day that's scheduled, right? And primarily what's on there, and what I mean by that is people meetings. Anything that's a meeting with a person, you put on that calendar. And everything else goes on your to-doist list or your
to-do
list.
That's exactly what I do. I have the calendars.
Yeah.
I mean, it's a little separate, like podcast and personal, Google. Work, Outlook. Do they clash sometimes? I really need to balance it better. But that being said, people meetings on calendars, to-do list on Todoist, and it's a really helpful balance of being like, okay, I have a meeting in 30 minutes. Which one of these can I knock out in 30? Versus, all right, I have a chunk of 3 hours. Like, let's get down to the more serious tasks.
Yeah, and those structures. And you could talk about block scheduling. There's all kinds of other stuff I could add in here, and it's all in my book. But those are the fundamentals. You could write a contract to yourself. You could say, if I don't do this, I have to pay a charity that I really don't care about, or a political party I don't care about, it a big check. All that stuff, right? That helps. But ultimately, just build those structures, and the calendar, and the to-do list are fundamental. You have to start there, and then proceed with other things. Then lastly is self-accountability. And ultimately, Joe can't hold you accountable. But if you use the analogy of the check engine light, right? When you're driving your car or your truck and the check engine light is on, it's alerting you and letting you know, and you may end up ignoring it, right? How many of us right now have some sort of an engine light on or some sort of a light on our dash that's been on for weeks or months, right? And we don't do anything about it. Well, if you have an accountability partner that's riding shotgun in your life on these things, they'll point it out to you and be like, dude, you got to do something about it because you and I are holding each other accountable and you promise you're going to follow up on these things. And he still can't make you do it, but he'll point it out or she'll point it out. And that's really powerful. But the self part is more than that. The self accountability is creating a point of no return. Have you ever skydived before? Okay, so when you did the skydiving, there was a point where there was no return, right? And that's where you're falling out of the airplane.
Yeah, it was when you're leaning out, looking down, and you're like, oh, this is happening.
Yep, wind's smacking you in the face. Like, there is no option. You are going out of that airplane. But up to that point, you could have been like, I'm terrified. I absolutely cannot do this. I think I'm going to pass out. You could come up with some way to get yourself out of jumping out of that airplane. And my encouragement, if people really want to accomplish their goals or establish a habit, is you have to figure out what that point of no return is. What is the thing that you can do that says, there's no way that I can turn back from this, right? So an example for me is for 4 years, I built my business so that my wife wouldn't have to work anymore. She didn't run a business. She worked as a nurse and was earning six figures a year. And that was great. Right. And so I had to get this business to a place where she didn't need to work. And so it took a little while to get there. But once we committed to her not working anymore, she quit at the hospital. That was my point of no return. That was what I call where I lost gravity. I wasn't going to crawl back into that. I couldn't. It was over. And so whatever that is for the person that's trying to make a commitment to a new habit or goal, figure out what that point of no return is. Tell people your story, why it is it's so important to you. ask someone to talk to you about it, and then plan it out on your calendar and your to-do list. You put all that together and you have a 95% likelihood of accomplishing the goal. Period. You do. Like, statistics prove it. But you got to do every single part of that process. Otherwise, you won't have that high of a percentage of accomplishment.
Man, that is some powerful stuff. I want to check out your book, and I really want to get the Sage OG version before people make you change the title. I want to say I got one of the original, the original set.
Nice.
Yeah, that's fantastic. I love that. That's so cool. I like, I think what stands out to me the most is the accountability, like the most consistent I have been with a goal. There have been 2-month-long challenges I've done, and they have been like incredibly consistent and well because they were attached to a partner. So one of them, we did a calorie burning challenge. So me and a friend versus 2 other people who could burn the most calories in 1 month. Was that the healthiest option? Probably not, but we did it. And there was no sense of hiding, because every single day it's like we were tracking each other's calories. I'd be like, hey man, where were you today? I needed you. Or the vice versa, like, we did great. The other one was, so this guy and I were doing like a writing challenge every day for 30 days. You had to post on LinkedIn. And he said, all right, so how much money are you willing to lose on this? I was like, I don't know, man, like $50. He's like, all right, $250. If one of us doesn't do it, we both have to pay to a charity we don't agree with. And I thought that was really helpful, because it wasn't just like, oh, I lost, I pay, or he lost, he pay. Like, it was, we're in this together. And that was a really, like, there were days I didn't want to write, and I'm like, I'm not going to be the reason he pays.
Yeah. Yeah. It's beautiful. And, you know, for me, since I was 18 years old, until recently, every week I would meet with a mentor, and that person or people would keep me accountable, and I'd help them as well. It was this exchange for 20 something years or whatever. I don't want to say how long it's been, but it's been a while. And then recently, now it's become every other week, because yeah, I'm busy in my business and et cetera. But I still am every other week, I'm doing that. And then I have weekly things that I do. I have masterminds that I'm in, and that's partly accountability too. But what we're tiptoeing around is community. That's what we're really talking about here, is community. If you have community, you're going to have better habits, right? The right community. Mm-hmm. But if you have the right community, the community that you choose and you design and put in your life on purpose, then you're going to have better habits. You're going to achieve greater goals.
If you have community, you will have habits. It's just what kind of community and what kind of habits.
Yes, yeah, exactly. I mean, in 30 minutes, I'm going to go meet with, how many people are going to be there? Probably eight other people. Most of them are couples. And we're going to talk about life. We're going to sit and talk about life. It's a Bible study, but we're going to mostly talk about life and talk about God a little bit. And we do it every week. On Wednesday at 5:30, we have dinner together from 5:30 to 6:30. And then we hang out till about 7:30
That's nice.
After that. And we're just chit-chatting and talking about life. And that community keeps me accountable. I lead the community too, so that helps. That keeps me accountable. But that type of thing is what we need when it comes to building the right habits, when it comes to accomplishing the goals. And you want to build communities that are based around the area that you want to grow in, right? So I have my CrossFit community. That's my physical area. I have my spiritual community, which is the group I'm doing tonight. I have my mentoring person that mentors me, which is development, right? So on and so forth. And those communities create accountability in each of those particular categories of our lives.
Yeah. Have you ever read The Miracle Morning?
I have, yeah.
It's I think about that a lot. It's the, you have 10 facets of life, and it's like you're trying to reach level 10 in all facets. And I was just thinking about it the other day. I was like, it's kind of tough to be trying to hit 10 goals at one time, you know, and it's not as bad as you think when you realize that it's split up. When you realize that, like, if one is friends and family, another one's your own finances, another one's career, it's like no one of these areas should be taking up your entire life. You should have, like, some sense of spirituality, family, relationships or community, and like your career versus your physical fitness, and then there's your physical environment. So like how my room's a mess, I should fix that. But like there, it really is like you could spend 5-10 minutes a day on one of these things, and it could lead like a week or month or long time positive impact. One phone call is really all you need to keep up with friends that are across the country.
Yeah. Yeah. We have friends from college that we meet with every single summer for four days, and we travel across wherever we need to go see them, you know, across the country to different areas. We meet somewhere, whatever, but it's beautiful. You know what you should do right now is you should hit your universal key to type in whatever to type in do laundry yeah, tonight.
I'll do that right now, everyone listener. My laundry.
Well, you know what's done. Interesting is the whole do it right now thing is huge.
I try to get that.
A lot of people don't.
I'm not the best, but I'm making a point.
Yeah. Yeah.
All right, Kyle, sweet. Thanks, dude. This has been a very informative episode. I really liked it. Now I just have the closing questions for you. So these are more fun, free-flowing questions.
Sure.
Starting with number one, what kind of music do you listen to?
I really like classic rock quite a bit. I grew up listening to that, and then I listen to... I don't like contemporary Christian. It's a little weird, but some of it I like. So I listen to that as well.
So keep it around rock. What about, what kind of TV shows or movies do you like?
Lately, my wife and I have been watching documentaries, like more of docudramas. Mm. So we're watching one on Romans. We watched one on the Ottoman Empire. And so those are, because TV is filthy now. It's just covered in basically softcore porn. And I don't need to sit there and watch that with my wife or ever. And so we're trying to figure out what can we watch that's like adult, that's not filthy. And we're like, wow, these docudramas are pretty dang good. So we've been watching those.
And, lastly, what kind of books do you read?
Not enough fiction, which sounds funny to say that, but I think I need to read a bit more fiction. Probably one a month would be good for me. Otherwise, it's all kinds of books as it relates to helping build my business and build up my clients' businesses. I have all kinds of book ideas and recommendations, but it's stuff that helps me to become a better business
awesome.
Owner.
Yeah. And where can people find you? Like whether it's your company, they want to go coach or they want to seek coaching or just on LinkedIn or anything, your podcast.
Yeah, totally. So go to blueshirtcoaching.com and then you can go to Blue Shirt Leadership Podcast is how you can find my podcast. And then I'm on LinkedIn as Kyle Gillette. It's very simple, just Kyle Gillette, and I'll pop up with Blue Shirt Coaching as the business name. I really enjoy just having conversations like this with people. You know, this was really close to just a casual conversation between you and I. I mean,
that's honestly like,
yeah,
that's one of the most feedback I receive. And I take it as a compliment every time because my goal is to make this feel like we're talking rather than I'm interviewing you. And granted, this is an interview based podcast. I do ask questions and that, but I don't want it to feel like I just ask a question and then go on to the next question. Like you didn't just answer. Yeah. You know what I'm saying? Like that's what I make it my best to be like, I don't know, man, that's the active listening in me. You got to read the book to find out.
Hey man, tell me the title. So when you publish it, I can get it. Cause that's the type of stuff I want to learn. You know, the way I plan it out is I have quarters of learning, right? So this quarter I'm focused on neuro-linguistic programming. Cool. So I'm going to learn that actually for the next two quarters, I'm going to learn that. And then the following quarter three, I'm going to learn about listening. And the fourth quarter of this year, I'm going to learn about thinking.
I'll get it out to you, Kyle, for accountability. Yeah.
Quarter three.
I do plan on. Yeah, I definitely. So I want to have the landing page up in February because I have the book. I just got to put it out. Like I just need a cover and to edit it and put it out there. Like I need to start focusing on the landing page too. There's work to be done, but I enjoy it.
I know a publisher, so offline I can connect you with him if you're looking for someone like that.
That would be amazing. Yes.
Yeah.
All right. Well, cool. Thanks for coming on the show, Kyle. I really appreciate it. Learned a lot.
Yeah. Yeah. Thank you. Appreciate it.